Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome this evening. It is my distinct pleasure to introduce to you Dr. Stanley Monteith. Dr. Monteith is the congressional candidate for the 16th District of California. He is an orthopedic surgeon who has given up his practice to run for this office because of his grave concern about what is happening in America today. And with that short introduction, I'd like to introduce to you Dr. Stanley Monteith.
But this morning I'm going to speak about a subject which is very dear to my heart, and that is what is happening to our nation. And yet what is happening to our nation intimately involves Christianity. Let me start out by telling you a story that was written 400 years before Christ was born in Bethlehem. It was an allegory. It was written by a Greek philosopher to tell you what life was like and what people were like in ancient Greece. It was the story of a group of men and women who had been taken captive and had been taken into a gigantic cavern where for many years they were kept in chains so that their faces were towards the wall of the cavern, their backs were towards the center of the cave where they're burned in eternal fire. Now, all the years that they were kept in chains, all they could see were the dancing shadows from that fire reflected upon the wall of the cave. At times, to amuse themselves, their captors would take perhaps a bust and place it between the fire and the wall, and that bust would be projected upon the wall as a shadow. And that was the reality of the people. And then one day, one of their group broke loose from his chains and left the cavern, and he saw reality. He saw the sun and the stars and the moon and the trees. And he went back into the cavern to break his fellow citizens, his fellow captives free. And as they left the cavern and they approached the light of the entrance, they turned back because, you see, for so long the reality had simply been those dancing shadows projected upon the wall of the cave. The story I've just told you is known as Plato's Parable of the Cave. It's appears in his Republic, and if you ever took philosophy 1A in college, you probably read it and then you forgot it. But I'd like to suggest to you that that story is as true today as it was when it was written 2,400 years ago. For much of what you know and much of what you believe, much of your reality are simply dancing shadows projected upon the wall of the cave. To give you a few examples, you'll remember it was just a few months ago when the Contra vote was going to be going before Congress. And the day before that, the President of the United States asked all three major networks if he could address the nation concerning the issue of the freedom fighters in Central America. And all three major networks, television networks, said, no, you can't address the nation because you have nothing new to say. Everything that needs to be said has already been said. Now, how did they know what he was going to say? Had they read his script? Of course not. It was simply that his address to the nation might have influenced that vote in Congress. Most of you have heard of the Grace Commission. J. Peter Grace was assigned by the president to determine what we could do to stop the flow of funds, the massive federal deficit that increases year after year. And Mr. Grace was so concerned when he finished his study that at his own expense, he put together a number of one-minute spots that he wanted to buy time for in America to tell you the message that the national debt was going to destroy this nation. And that by the year 2000, it might well be the year 2005, interest on that debt might be the largest thing that we were paying for. As far as our national debt, that national debt would destroy America as it has destroyed other nations. And so he went to all three major networks and he wanted to buy time. And all three major networks said, that subject is too controversial. We won't sell you that time. And I've talked to the administrative assistant to J. Peter Grace, who assures me that this indeed is the case. In fact, he said, we were so amazed that they wouldn't sell us time to tell the message to the American public that we put out a press release. How many of you read the press release? None of you read it. because you see, your reality, indeed, are those dancing shadows projected upon the wall of the cave. When Mr. Gorbachev came to America, the major media put out a poll, his popularity against President Reagan's, and the American people, because of the massive blitz put on to glamorize Gorbachev, gave him a higher rating than they gave the President of the United States. Now, the media never mentioned that he was the man in charge in Russia when the Russian forces were dropping little toys in Afghanistan. They weren't really toys. They were bombs to blow off the hands and feet of these kids. But the press never mentioned that he was responsible. He was in charge in Russia when the American major was shot and allowed to bleed to death for 3 hours. Nobody could go to his aid. Gorbachev was in charge. Never mentioned. Who among you has not read of the 6 million Jews who were tragically slaughtered in the Holocaust in Germany? But when was the last time you read about the 60 million people that the communists have killed in consolidating power in Russia? The 70 to 80 million people that Chinese communists killed in consolidating power in China? It's recorded by congressional investigations. Solzhenitsyn's written about what happened in Russia in his classic article in the spring of 1980 in Foreign Affairs magazine. When was the last time you heard anybody talk about the 2 to 3 million Cambodians who were slaughtered by the Khmer Rouge with financing from the Chinese communists? The million people who've been killed in Afghanistan, the million people who were intentionally starved to death in Ethiopia 3 years ago with Soviet backing, while the food was allowed to stay in the warehouses that we set because they wanted to terrorize the population in exhibition, or the million who are being starved systematically today. When was the last time you read about that in the newspaper? And you didn't. Because, ladies and gentlemen, your reality are simply those dancing shadows projected on the wall of the cave. I first became aware of this in 1962. Naive, like most people, like most Americans, I picked up an article in the San Francisco Chronicle, and it said, Premier Ben Bella marched into Algiers today to the cheers at the head of his troops to the cheers of the throngs. Straightforward article, but who was Ben Bella? I didn't know. Like most of you, it had no meaning to me. What was happening in Algeria? Was this a good revolution, a bad revolution? The same article, the same day, the Santa Cruz Sentinel. Premier Ben Bella marched into Algiers today at the head of his communist-equipped troops to the cheers of the throngs. The rest of the article identical. Two words deleted from the San Francisco Chronicle changed the entire meaning. Somebody deleted two words. The first of tens of thousands of situations where there's been thought control that we've subsequently seen, but most people are not looking. Most people are not trying to understand. Most people do not understand that their reality are those dancing shadows on the wall of the cave. And there are certain things that Barbara Walters and John Chancellor and David Brinkley and Dan Rather do not tell you. And that is the story I'm about to tell you today about America's Christian heritage. Now, Catholics and Protestants believe in Jesus Christ. Jews and Mohammedans and atheists believe about Jesus Christ. And you can be a good American and be a Jew or a Mohammedan or an atheist. But if you do not understand the Christian principles upon which this nation was based, you cannot be a good American. And if you try to change America from what it was into either a Jewish or Mohammedan or atheist state, you will destroy the fabric of our society, and I would like to suggest that that is what's happening today. Now, if you study history, and history has been my hobby for 25 years, if you study history, you will find that throughout all time, people have been oppressed by kings, by tribal chieftains, by emperors, by monarchs. There's always been somebody in control. There was only one time in all of ancient history when people were really free. And this situation is described in the 8th chapter of the first book of Samuel, where the children of Israel lived in their 12 tribes completely free of a structure of government. They were ruled really by judges. And those judges were Samuel's sons. And those judges became corrupt, and they took bribes. They no longer adhered to the law. They did what was expedient rather than what was just. And so the leaders of the various tribes came to Samuel and announced that they wanted a king. And Samuel went to God and said, I don't want to give them a king. And God said to Samuel, it is not that they have turned against you, but they have turned against me. Give them a king, but tell them what this will mean. And Samuel went to the children of Israel and said, you don't really want a king, because if you have a king, he's going to lead you into wars. If you have a king, he's going to tax you and take 10% of what you have. You see, in those days, kings were pikers compared with the IRS. He said, he's going to have your sons and daughters running beside his chariots and working in his fields. You do not want a king. And they said, we want a king, we want a king. And so he gave them the first king, who was Saul, who was followed by David, who was followed by Solomon, and the progressive degradation of kings down to Ahab and Jezebel, names we associate with depravity, and the children of Israel were destroyed and carried off in captivity. And then throughout all history, people were oppressed. Oh, there was a time briefly in ancient Greece where there was an element of democracy, but if you read Plato's Republic, Plato will tell you that democracy did not work. And that's why he wanted a so-called just king, a hierarchy to rule the people. For a time, there was a republican form of government in the Senate in Rome, but that was only there for a short period of time, because this was soon replaced by the Caesars and emperors of Rome, and then with the bread and the circuses, comparable to our welfare and Monday night football. There was the breakdown in the family. Homosexuality was rampant. There were no longer any moral standards. There was affluence. And when the time came for the final battle, there was no one to fight it, and the world was plunged into the Dark Ages. And if you studied the period that followed the fall of Rome, there was little organized society. Yes, there was the Holy Roman Empire. This was the time of feudalism. In England, it was totally autocratic, and the nobles didn't like it because the king could have them executed any time he wanted to. People had no right. The king was all-powerful. And so it was that they took the king out in the woods, and at sword point, they got him to sign the Magna Carta, which was the first document that began to limit the power of government over the lives of the people. And then, as time went by in England, there were more and more documents. There was the Petition of Rights and the Bill of Rights, which were signed, which progressively limited the power of the king and established a form of representative government. Shortly after Christopher Columbus discovered America, there were two major events in the world that would shape our future. One of them was the Renaissance, the other was the Reformation. And the theme of the Renaissance was, we can do things better than ever before. Man can paint more beautiful pictures, he can make more beautiful sculpture, he can create more beautiful music. Man, through his reason, without God, can create a perfect society. And then there was another event, and that was the Reformation, where Luther challenged the control of the Catholic Church. Now, just as today, where we have Jimmy Swaggerts and Jimmy Bakers within the Protestant denomination, so in those days, there were people who used the Catholic structure and hierarchy for their own use and for their own misuse. And Luther pointed out the potential corruption, the actual corruption within the church at that time, and said, we do not need a corrupt church to get to God. Man can reach God by reading the Bible, which was heresy. You weren't supposed to read the Bible. But Luther said, man can reach God and can then become a better individual. And so it was that the printing press came and people began to read Bibles and people began to write about concepts of individual freedom. And within England, there were a number of writers, among whom there was John Locke and William Blackstone and Samuel Rutherford. Blackstone was a jurist. Rutherford was a theologian. And they wrote about God and the fact that because there was a God, man could be free. And so it was that the various groups began migrating to America. If you've ever read the story of the pilgrims coming to America, the Mayflower Compact was based upon a belief in God. And when they arrived in Plymouth, or that area, they initially started out as a communal society. And it didn't work. And the people starved. And so they went to the concept of each man would own his own piece of property, and he would work in his own fields, and he would help himself, and then there'd be enough to help others with. And that was the story of the first Thanksgiving, because they had such bountiful harvest when they turned away from the communal concepts to the individual concept. And if you ever read the writings of William Bradford, the first governor of Plymouth, of the Pilgrims, you'll find this deep dependence upon God. And this was true of the Puritans. It was true in every one of our individual colonies. It was William Penn, the Quaker, who said, "Those who will not be ruled by God will be ruled by tyrants." Every one of our states had a state religion in 1776, with one exception. And they were all Protestants. Admittedly, there were Jews living here, there were Catholics living here, but men could live in freedom under a Christian form of government. It was two themes that were running through the minds of the people when America was created. One was that the power of government was to be limited for all time, because they did not want an all-powerful government. And secondly, that this was to be a Christian nation. Now, to understand the idea of limited government, you must understand that it is government that oppresses people. It's government that creates wars. It's government that regulates and regiments people. Liberty and limited government are synonymous, and tyranny and total government are synonymous. It was George Washington who said, "Government is not eloquence, government is not persuasion, government is force. Like fire, it is a dangerous servant, but a fearful master." It was Thomas Paine who said, "All societies are good, but government, even at its best, is a necessary evil. At its worst, it's intolerable." And it was Thomas Jefferson who said, "That government governs best that governs the least. Let's take the chains off of people and put chains onto government." And so it was that we created in America a limited central government. Now, you are told that this was for a rural society 200 years ago. No. The people who created America had studied what had happened in Greece, and they had studied what had happened in Rome, and they knew that government could never be trusted. And if you give power to politicians, they will consistently misuse that power. And so they built into the Constitution limitations on what the government could do. If you read the preamble to the American Constitution, "We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, maintain domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and ensure the blessings of liberty for ourselves and our posterity, do hereby establish and ordain this Constitution of the United States." Provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare. There was nothing about providing for the general welfare. And if you read Section 8 of Article 1, which is the so-called General Welfare Clause, and you read it in the original, and then you see what's been done to it in the textbooks, they have, simply by putting in a period and putting in a number, changed the entire meaning of it, those people who believe in an autocratic system of government. And if you want to see how that's done, come to my library and I'll show you. And what the textbooks say has nothing to do with the way the original Constitution was written. The entire concept of the Bill of Rights was to limit the power of government. "Congress shall pass no law respecting the establishment of religion or the free exercise thereof, or abridging the right of freedom of speech, freedom of press, or freedom of assembly. Congress shall pass no law." You could have it at the state, you could have it at the local level, but you could not have it at the national level. "The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be abridged." Didn't say handguns, didn't say rifles. It said the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be abridged. Why? Not only for fear of foreign governments, but for fear of their own governments. And the 10th Amendment to the Constitution said, "Any powers not specifically herein given to the Congress are reserved to the states and to the people." Now, this was not to be a democracy. That's what you're taught in school, but those are your shadows, those dancing shadows on the wall of the cave. Any one of you wonder why we have an electoral college, why you and I don't elect the president? It's elected by the electoral college. Because we were not to elect the president. This was to be kept as far away from the individual as possible. We did not elect our senators. You see, they were to be elected by the various state legislatures. The only person we elected was the members of the House of Representatives. And let me tell you, in 1986, 98.4% of all elected representatives were returned to the House. Do you think that really represents the people of America? We've lost control of the House of Representatives as we've turned towards democracy. If you read the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, the constitutions of all of our states, and the Federalist Papers, which were written by Madison, Jay, and Hamilton, to demonstrate what the Constitution was really all about, you will never find the use of the word democracy other than to decry it. And if you read the 10th of the Federalist Papers, and go home and get it and read it, here is what Madison said. He said, democracies are air spectacles of turmoil and contention, are air incompatible with personal security and private property, and are usually as short in the duration as they are violent in their depth. But how many of you have read that in school? Read the 45th of the Federalist Papers, where Madison said, the powers of the federal government are limited and defined. The powers of the local, of the state government are unlimited and ill-defined. The federal government has to do with war and international relations. The state government has to do with life, liberty, and property. How far we've come from the original American heritage. Now, the other basic theme was that this was to be a Christian nation. Anybody who says that today is immediately scoffed at, and they said, where in the Constitution does it say this is a Christian nation? Well, you have to understand the basis upon which the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence were created. Samuel Rutherford was a Scotsman who wrote a book called Lex Rex, in which he laid out two basic concepts, and one was the covenant between man, the ruler, and God, and that the ruler had to be true to God to govern justly. And the other was the fact that all men were created equal. And because all men were created in sin, the ruler was created in sin, what right did the ruler have to control the individual? And it was Samuel Rutherford who created the concept of liberty and equality that would be the cry of revolutions from then on, only most of those revolutions did not adhere to the God that he worshipped and felt was the basis of all freedom. And that term, all men are created equal, became the basis of our Declaration of Independence, where it said, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. There is a God, and it is because there is a God we can be free. 90 years later, Abraham Lincoln, standing on the plains of Gettysburg, gave his famous address, couched in those same terms when he said, 47 years ago, our forefathers brought forth in this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty, and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. There is a Creator, and it is from that Creator that our freedoms come. If you read the writings of William Blackstone, who was an English jurist, he talks about nature's God and the fact that nature's God and nature's law is because of Christ and because God had given us freedom. And if you read the Declaration of Independence, you will see the references going back to Blackstone of nature's God and nature's law. These people understood the Christian philosophy and theology. You are told that our leaders weren't Christians. Well, read what George Washington said. He said it is impossible to rule the world without God and the Bible. Patrick Henry said the Bible is worth more than all other books ever printed. Andrew Jackson would say, it is upon that book, referring to the Bible, that the Republic rests. It was Benjamin Franklin who said at the time when the Constitution was being written and there was a tremendous contention among the various representatives of the Constitutional Convention, Benjamin Franklin said this, I have lived a long time, sir, and the longer I live, the more convinced I am of this truth. that God rules in the affairs of men. And if it is true that a sparrow cannot fall without his notice, can a great empire be raised without his aid? Now, where did that phrase, a sparrow cannot fall without his notice? That's from the New Testament. At that point, Benjamin Franklin called upon the Congress to establish a chaplain who would lead in prayer every time the Constitutional Convention was opened, and that pattern still exists today. Congress always opens with a prayer, as does the Supreme Court, as do the various state legislatures, as is imprinted upon our money. And yet we cannot mention Christ or God in school. In fact, if a teacher gets up and says, I'm a Christian, I'd like to give you a Bible, he can be fired. And I'd like to suggest something seriously is wrong and something seriously has happened to our nation today. I think it was de Tocqueville who said it best. A French philosopher looking for the secret of America, because you see, France had been through revolution after revolution after revolution at that time. De Tocqueville said, I came to America, I sought for the secret of her greatness, and genius, in her harbors, in her fertile fields, and her boundless forests, in her vast industry. I sought for it in her public schools, in her institutions of learning. I sought for it in her Democratic Congress and in her matchless Constitution. But it wasn't until I went into the churches of America and I saw the pulpits flaming with righteousness that I understood the secret of her power and her genius. America is great because America is good. And if America ever ceases to be good, America will cease to be great. In 1862, the Senate called for a day of fasting and prayer to God. In 1892, the Supreme Court held that this was a Christian country. And yet, within a few decades after that, we began to see the erosion of our Christian beliefs and the Christian foundation of this nation. And to understand that, we must take you on another course. For there were two courses that we started on in the world shortly after Columbus discovered America. One was the course of the Reformation, and the other was the course of the Renaissance, with the belief that man could create a perfect society. And when theologians in America were talking about resistance to tyranny being obedience to God, writers in Europe, like Voltaire and Rousseau, were talking about utopia without God and how Christianity would be done away with and man would create a perfect society. And in the year 1789, the same year that our Constitution was ratified by two-thirds of the states, that same year there occurred a revolution in France based upon the concept that we will destroy government, we will destroy religion, and man will create utopia. And the streets ran red with blood. Robespierre and his reign of terror, and soon Robespierre and Dr. Guillotine fell beneath the knife by which they had murdered so many other innocent people. And then they established a new government, an assembly, and then they were replaced by a group of 12 and a group of 3, and then one man came to rule. He was the fulfillment of the revolution, and his name was Napoleon Bonaparte. And soon he was an emperor, and they were plunged into wars. And then Napoleon was defeated, and they went back into a republic and then back into a monarchy under Louis Napoleon. It was in 1825, while Europe was in the throes of this revolutionary movement, that Europeans came to America with a dream of creating socialism here. And Robert Owen, who was a very wealthy British capitalist, came to America and set up a socialist society, a local communal society where everything would be owned by the workers. Well, it didn't work. The thing lasted a few years and went broke because socialism does not work. But at that time, Robert Owen formed a series of socialist organizations intent upon changing America. One of the members of this secret society was named Robert Brownson, and he eventually defected and became a Christian. And he talked about how they were setting up these organizations all across America based upon the Carbonari. How many of you ever heard in school about the Carbonari? Secret society in Italy. There are secret societies all throughout the world. Let me tell you, I lived in South Africa under a secret society, which is the Brutobot. It controlled South Africa for the 2.5 years I was there. Everybody knew about the secret society in South Africa, but you never heard about it in America because you're not supposed to believe in this sort of thing. Well, anyway, what Brownson wrote is that our purpose was, first of all, to destroy the churches and make them halls of learning, and secondly, to destroy Christianity in the schools. They set out 150 years ago to accomplish that. It was in 1850 years ago to accomplish that. It was in 1847 that an amazing document was written. It would change the course of the world. Set out 150 years ago to accomplish that. It was in 1847 that an amazing document was written. It would change the course of the world. Starting with these words, there is a specter haunting Europe today. It is the specter of communism. And it ended with this phrase, working men of the world unite, throw off your yokes, you have nothing to lose but your chains, you have a world to gain. And it was the call to the world revolution, which was written by Karl Marx at the instigation of a secret society called the Society of the Just. But how many of you read that in school? Now, Karl Marx said something very significant, and he said this. He said, we can create revolutions in underdeveloped countries, but in highly industrialized countries, we are not going to be able to bring about socialism. And to create socialism, we will have to do a number of things, and he laid out 10 points. We will control private property. We will have a progressive income tax. We will have an inheritance tax. Government will control transportation. Government will control money and credit. Government will control agriculture and industry and labor unions, and there will be a free public education for every citizen. How many of those things have come to pass in America? In 1860, in Europe, the first Socialist International was created, a conglomeration of socialists throughout the world who had this utopian dream of creating a perfect society without God. That society lasted just a few years. It dissolved on January 4th, 1876, the 100th anniversary of the birth of America. In 1860 to 1865, we had a great war. Did you ever wonder why that war went on so long? There were a lot of people in the South that didn't believe in slavery. There were a lot of people in the North who didn't want the war. But you see, the socialists working within our society realized that by the disruption of war, they could begin to bring about the change of our society with its individual states to centralize more power in government, because the whole battle from the South point of view was, even if we don't agree in slavery, we don't want somebody coming in and taking away this concept of states' rights. And so as a result of the war, the 14th and 15th Amendments were passed. Most people, in fact, everybody who voted for them, thought it had to do with slavery. And yet those amendments have been subsequently interpreted intentionally to begin to restrict not slavery, but your freedom and my freedom. In 1870, in England, a professor of art, an art criticism, named John Ruskin, began lecturing on politics. Now, he really didn't understand anything about politics, but he began lecturing on politics and telling the young intellectuals of England that they had to remake the world. It was the white man's burden. They had to raise the entire world up to the level of England. It was their objective and goal to create a heaven on earth. And as a result of John Ruskin's teaching, Cecil Rhodes went to Africa and was able to capture the diamond mines and the gold mines of South Africa, which still today are controlled by people associated with his trust, and to use that wealth to create a series of organizations dedicated to world socialism. But people in these organizations were people of great wealth who shared his common goals, common objectives, and common dreams. By 1880 in England, a series of organizations were created the most prominent of which was to be known as the Fabian Socialists, headed by such men as George Bernard Shaw, H.G. Wells, Annie Besant. What did George Bernard Shaw say about socialism? The classic definition can be found in his book, An Intelligent Woman's Guide to Socialism and Capitalism, where he said this: "When I say socialism, I mean a system by which you of equality of income or nothing. Under this system, you will be forcibly fed, housed, and clothed, whether you like it or not, and if we found you are unworthy of all of our efforts, it may be necessary to put you to death in a kindly manner, but while you are allowed to live, you will have to live well." You see, it was a system of force. George Washington had recognized this years before when he said, "Government is not persuasion, government is not eloquence, government is force." Socialism is force. Control over your lives. It doesn't work without that. Somebody once said, socialism is a sincere, benevolent, idealistic theory, but it doesn't work without force. And when you use that force will be misused. Most of you probably believe that Benito Mussolini was a rightist. He wasn't. He was a socialist. If you read the book written by his wife, Mrs. Mussolini, she'll tell you he was a socialist. Everything he did was for socialism. Fascism and socialism are exactly the same, and the fact that many of you equate fascism being on the right shows how your reality has simply become those dancing shadows projected upon the wall of the cave. Benito Mussolini was a close ally of Lenin's. In fact, Lenin repeatedly asked him if he wouldn't join Italy together with his organization, but Benito never did that. In fact, Mrs. Mussolini tells how Adolf came down. Adolf Hitler came from Germany to get his ideas, and as Benito Mussolini had his clenched fist salute, so Adolf Hitler used this clenched fist salute, and you watch television, you'll see Jesse Jackson there with a clenched fist salute, the salute of the socialist revolution. Watch it on television, but nobody ever comments on it. You'll see it. As Benito Mussolini had his black shirt, so Hitler had his brown shirt. If you read Mein Kampf, it tells you that the red and the flag of the Nazi flag was for socialism, National Socialist Party. Of course, they're on the right and communism's on the left. No, they're just simply squabbling like the Chinese and the Russians do. All part of the world collectivist force, that world atheist collectivist force that says mankind can create a perfect world without God. It was in 1880 that another fascinating organization was created, and that was the Second Socialist International. Now, how many of you heard of the meetings of the Socialist International? Very, very few of you will, because this is one of the most powerful organizations in the world today. This is where Mitterrand of France comes from, Kresge of Austria, Willy Brandt of Germany, the leaders of the socialist parties of Scandinavia. This is where Peres of Israel comes from. If you read Golda Meir's book, My Life, and Golda Meir was an honest socialist, I honestly believe that. She tells about her meetings with going to the meetings of the Socialist International, talking with Willy Brandt and Kresge, and how horrified she was to believe that they didn't believe in democratic socialism, that they didn't want any dissent. And she writes about it totally disillusioned. How could this be? Why, we're to be democratic. Golda Meir's book, My Life, a member of the Socialist International. The PRI of Mexico are observers. The PLO are observers. Who is our representative? How many of you know? His name is Carl Gresham, or at least it was in the past. Who's Carl Gresham? He's the administrative assistant to a woman who's been suggested for the presidency of the United States on the Republican ticket. A woman named Jean Kirkpatrick. Now, Jean Kirkpatrick is an anti-communist, but she admits to being a welfare state socialist. She is on the board of directors of the League for Industrial Democracy, which I happen to belong to. About every fifth or sixth letter I get, they put her on the list of supporters. But you don't read that in the newspaper. She's supposed to be a conservative Republican. But you see, your reality are simply those dancing shadows that are projected on the wall of the cave by Barbara Walters and Dan Rather and John Chancellor. You are not getting the truth. Well, the Socialist International has existed since 1880. It still exists today. I have attended its meetings. I've stood in the doorway watching these representatives from all over the world planning the socialist plan. And what is their plan? It was laid out at a place called Canicum in the Caribbean a few years ago, and it said, we're going to transfer the wealth of America to the third world nations. And at the time I read that, I said, that's ridiculous. The American people would never stand for that. And yet our banks lend money to these countries. It'll never be repaid. Talking to somebody over in Watsonville recently, they were horrified to find out that if you want to go into Mexico and build a frozen food plant to freeze food to ship it in America, you can grow it down for literally nothing because the wage scale is $3 a day. Here it's $5 an hour. But the government, the American government, will give you a grant of 60%. You can get the rest of it from the World Bank for 3%. You can go down and build a plant to get frozen food and ship it into California and to undercut our farmers, you see, because we're transferring our wealth to third world nations. It's going on all the time. It's part of the plan, but you never read the plan. I have it in my library because I subscribe to their publications. You never heard of it because Barbara Walters didn't tell you, and John Chancellor didn't tell you, and Don Rather didn't tell you. You see, you're not getting the truth. Well, it was in 1917, after the first revolution, the March Revolution in Russia, when Lenin gathered his followers together. They were all members of the Socialist Internationale, the Second Internationale, and Lenin said this. He said, you must understand that the average socialist does not have the courage or the brutality to make a revolution work. We will no longer call ourselves socialists. We will call ourselves communists. And everybody said, no, we're all socialists. And he said, no, henceforth we will call ourselves communists. And it is that moment when the Third Internationale was born. That's the origin of the term. Subsequently, you had a Fourth Internationale with Trotsky, you had a Fifth Internationale with a Maoist, and we have the Corporate Internationale, which is the continuation of that group that was formed by Ruskin, a group of very, very wealthy people who embraced the welfare state society and one world government. But Barbara Walters doesn't tell you about that group. To understand what has happened in America, I must take you back to 1911. The key pivotal figure in the history of America is a man named Edward Mandel House. He was the man who picked Woodrow Wilson for the presidency, who picked FDR for the presidency, and he dominated American domestic and foreign policy from 1911 until about 1930. In 1911, he wrote a book. It's called Philip Drew Administrator, and it is the plan for the dictatorship in America. How will we do that? Why, very simply, we will elect a majority of senators. Then we will elect our president, a man that we can control. But, you see, we have division of powers in America. We have a Supreme Court that up till that time would not allow centralization of power in government. And so Colonel House said, we will pack the Supreme Court with people who do not believe in the negative form of government, but believe in a positive form of government. In other words, this totally regulatory government. And that is exactly what's been going on ever since then. And that was the recent confrontation over the Bork nomination, because Bork was a constitutionalist who believed in limiting the power of government, and they would not allow him to get into the Supreme Court. We must not allow anybody who wants to turn the tables back towards a free society, because we are on a one-way track to dictatorship. Now, Colonel Edward Mandel House had a tremendous influence on Woodrow Wilson, and under his domination, four of the major events moving us towards a socialist society occurred. The Federal Reserve System was established where government could control money and credit. We passed the 17th Amendment, direct election of senators. No longer would they represent the states. Now they could be elected by the people and controlled by the group that Edward Mandel House intended to create. The 16th Amendment, which established the income tax, the progressive income tax, was established, and then the Sherman Antitrust Act to regulate monopoly capitalism. Ken Reed, sitting in the back, will realize that today the Sherman Antitrust Act is used so that he and I cannot talk about what I charge for an office visit, or he. You see how clever it was many years ago to pass that bill that can be used not against monopoly capitalists, it doesn't stop them, but against the individual. That's what it was all about. Edward Mandel House was a tremendous admirer of Benito Mussolini, and if you read his diary, you will find that he wanted to give a copy of this book he'd written. It was called Philip the Administrator to Benito Mussolini, but he didn't really feel that he could do that because at that time he hadn't admitted that he had actually written the book. Now, most of you never heard of this, and the reason you didn't is because his diary is totally suppressed. Talk about being suppressed. He made a stipulation when he gave this to Yale University that this could never be published for 50 years. And after 50 years, it could be published. And that was in the 1970s. Whereupon, Times Mirror came and bought it to publish it, copyrighted it, and then refused to publish it. And for 10, 15 years, it's been sitting there. You can go back and read it. You can't copy it. In fact, I have in my library the only copy of that diary that still exists today outside of Yale University, to my knowledge. Don't ask me how we got the copy. To understand Edward Mandel House and the part that he played in the Russian Revolution, there's one section in the diary, which you will never hear of from Barbara Walter or John Chancellor or Dan Rather. You will never hear of the fact that he tells about having had breakfast one day with Clemenceau, who was the French foreign minister, and he said to the Clemenceau, "We can't put down communism," because at that time, Clemenceau, the French foreign minister, this was 1919, and the communists were talking about taking over the West, Clemenceau said, "We've got to put down the Bolsheviks." And Colonel House said, "Oh, I convinced him that it would be impossible to put down the Bolsheviks." And then I had lunch with Orlando, who was also very concerned about the communists in Russia, and I convinced him that we could never put down the Bolsheviks. But he said, "I knew it wasn't true. I knew it would be a very, very simple thing to put down the Bolsheviks, a few battalions of artillery, a few battalions of well-trained soldiers, we could put down the rabble of the Russian army. But I didn't want Clemenceau and Orlando to know that." And so it was that communism was allowed to persist and spread like its evil web across the world. I went back many times to Yale University to read Colonel House's papers because Colonel House was not a communist. So why would he do a foolish thing like that? And there's so much more that he did to ensure the establishment of communism in Russia. Communism was a failure. It didn't work. It never would have survived without infusions of money and help from America, and America blocking other nations from doing something to stop it. And my last trip, I found what I was looking for, written by Colonel House, that statement, "Communism is brutal. Communism is tyrannical. Communism is a horrible situation, but one day the brutality will wither away. And the socialism of Russia will come forth, lead America, indeed, the whole world to the promised land." And you see, that's what it's really all about, the promised land, the kingdom of heaven on earth without God. This is the socialist dream. This is their intention. This is their goal. Since that time, the socialists have continued working in our society. Another classic book is The Open Conspiracy, written by H.G. Wells in the early 30s, where he tells how socialists will infiltrate the media, the churches, the schools, every aspect of life to bring about a socialist America. Their Mein Kampf was written in 1933, the Humanist Manifesto, number one, the second one in 1973, the original one signed by John Dewey, the second one signed by people like Walter Mondale's brother, Lester. The media never told you about that. Barbara Walters never told you about that. John Chancellor didn't tell you about it. Dan Rather didn't tell you about that. You can get it from the Humanist. You can get it from me. We have copies of it. If you take Christianity and everything we believe in as Christians, and you turn it upside down, that's what they believe in. Abortion, that's fine, but protect the criminal. Kill the innocent, but protect the guilty. They're against the death penalty. They want to get the criminals out of jail. Don't ask me why, but nothing they do is logical. Homosexuality is all right. The family isn't all right. If it feels good, do it. There are no moral values. There is no God. Socialism, internationalism, everything we believe in, they believe exactly the opposite. It's all written down, and how many of you ever read or heard of the Humanist Manifesto? Well, we've got a few good people here, and obviously Stan Jensen's been doing a good job, but you should get it, and you should read it, and you should give it to others. Internationality, ADA, the League for Industrial Democracy, all of these organizations working towards total government control over our lives. And then the communists. You see, every communist believes in total regulation over your life, too. And every communist works for socialism. Now, not every socialist is a communist, but every communist is a socialist. Not every atheist is a communist, but every communist is an atheist. Not every humanist is a communist, but every communist is a humanist. Not every internationalist is a communist, but every communist is an internationalist, and you can't defeat any one of these things by embracing that philosophy. It's like fighting a fire with kerosene. It just doesn't work. The communists are working towards total centralization of power in our government. Time after time, the socialists create a revolution, whether it be in China or Cuba or Nicaragua, and the communists take it over. Rhodesia. Our policy as a nation is not to create freedom throughout the world, no matter what you may be told, but is to push towards world socialism. And this is why our industrialists over in Russia today, giving loans, building up the Soviet economy, you can get a loan a lot cheaper if you're in Russia today than you can if you're in the United States. And the same thing holds true for most of the communist bloc nations. Now, why doesn't Barbara Walters and John Chancellor tell you about these things? Well, there was an organization. It was created by our old friend Colonel Edward Mandel House back in 1920. It came to be known as the Council on Foreign Relations. What does it believe in? Get hold of Barry Goldwater's book, With No Apologies, and he'll tell you. Senator Goldwater fought these people for years. He said these people are not anti-communists. They're not communists, but they are willing to make any concession to communism. They believe in socialism and welfareism, and they believe in power. There are, within its memberships, about 2,400 people, including Barbara Walters, John Chancellor, David Brinkley, Lair and McNeil. In fact, all the people who control the media. I have a list of them outside there if you'd like to get hold of them and read them. The people who control the media, 14 United States senators, the people who control our great industrial centers in America and the great banking centers. And what is their goal? Simply a welfare state and a one-world government, which is identical to what the Socialist Internationale wants, what the Third Internationale wants, what the Fourth and Fifth Internationals want. They work with the ACLU and all of these organizations intent upon undermining Christianity. And how did it happen? Why, we let it happen. We were so busy being busy, we didn't get involved. As somebody once said, there are many, many Christians who worship the ground their head is buried in. And I think it's about time that we realize what lies ahead for this nation if we don't change the direction we're headed. History tells us the story of the three Punic Wars. Many, many years ago, 250 years before Christ was born in Bethlehem, there on the north shore of Africa, there was a magnificent country, a magnificent town. It was the center of all commerce in Africa. And the ships went from Carthage all over the known world. It was a trading center. It was an industrial center. And all the wealth of Africa funneled through Carthage as it went into the Near East and into Europe. And Carthage eventually came into confrontation with Rome, and the first of the Punic Wars, a battle was carried out, and the Carthaginians were triumphant. And they captured the Roman army, including a Roman general named Regulus. But the Carthaginians wanted to live in peace, and so they sent Regulus back to Rome with a message, if Rome promises throughout all time and live in peace with us, we'll release your whole army. And Regulus said to the Roman Senate, I am pledged to go back by my word and my honor, and I will. But I want to tell you, do not make peace with Carthage. Rome and Carthage can never live eternally in peace. And so the Romans refused to make peace with Carthage. The Second Punic War was when Hannibal went through the Alps. Hannibal with his magnificent army, a mighty general. You've all heard about how he was trapped for a time in the Alps by Fabius, the Roman general who fought wars. He never came into direct confrontation with Hannibal. He simply hit him from the side, the front, the back. But Hannibal eventually got into Italy. He stood at the very gates of Rome, but he could never get enough support and supplies for the politicians in Carthage to be victorious. And although he roamed all over Italy, he could never win because the politicians of Carthage would not give him the supplies and the men that he needed. And then the Third Punic War. And it was in the Third Punic War when the mighty armies of Rome descended upon Carthage, and the Carthaginians said, we want peace. And so they said, fine, if you'll simply send 300 of the sons of your leaders out, and we'll take them to Rome as hostages, then we can live in peace. And they did that. And then the Romans said, if you will simply send out all of your weapons, we'll know that you want to live in peace. And so they did that. And then the Romans said, if you'll simply leave the city now, we will destroy it. And the Carthaginians, realizing they'd been betrayed by their leaders, grabbed them and literally tore them apart limb from limb. The women cut off their hair to make the strings for the bows. They mounted the walls. For 3 years they fought. And eventually they were defeated. And all the men and boys were slaughtered. The women were taken away in slavery. The city was totally torn down stone by stone. And salt was sprinkled into the land where once had stood the proud city of Carthage. You see, that's what happens with appeasement. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this does not have to happen in America. You know the story today that John Chancellor doesn't tell you and Barbara Walters doesn't tell you. We have means of beginning to turn this around because most Americans value freedom. How are you going to get this message out? You can get tapes of this talk today. And you can either get them here at the church or I'll provide them for you with one proviso. And that is that if you get one, and I'll give it to you for nothing, if you'll promise me that you'll make 5 copies of it and give it to other people with a proviso that they'll either give you $2 a copy or they'll make 5 copies and pass it on. We have other tapes in the back going into the untold story of an AIDS epidemic that will destroy this country within a relatively few years, political philosophy, another story on the Christian background of America. Those tapes are available for $2 or with a promise that you'll dub them and make 5 copies and pass them on and insist that other people make copies and pass them on. We can get this story out.
Clarify what you've heard today. I would urge you to reread Barry Goldwater's book, With No Apologies. For the background of the history of world socialism, James H. Billington's book, Fire in the Minds of Men. For the background of those covert and concealed organizations that led from Ruskin to Cecil Rhodes to the corporate socialist movement through Colonel Edward Mandel House and into the Council on Foreign Relations, I would suggest Carol Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. It's a fascinating book because after Macmillan published it and released a few thousand copies, they simply destroyed the plates so it could never be reprinted again. And all the copies that you get today come from a pirate who ultimately bought the copyright from Carol Quigley's widow. And then, of course, I'd suggest you read Colonel Edward Mandel House's book, Philip Drew Administrator. For the membership list of the Council on Foreign Relations, you only have to write to 58 East 68th Street in New York City, New York, and ask the Council on Foreign Relations for the membership list, and of course you'll find the members' names there. Now, the reason that Barbara Walters and Dan Rather and John Chancellor don't tell you about the organization is that when they join the organization, they have to promise they will never reveal anything that they ever hear in the meetings. And if they do, they understand they'll be put out of the organization. This is indeed a fascinating and powerful organization, which has basically fulfilled the plan that Colonel Edward Mandel House laid out in his book, Philip II Administrator, up until the time when Ronald Reagan became the President of the United States. And Ronald Reagan was the first president for many years who had not been under their total control and domination. And Ronald Reagan has tried very hard to turn our nation around, but unfortunately, without their support and without the support of a Congress, one man was incapable of changing the course of our nation. We have a problem, but that problem is not insurmountable. What must you do? You must become involved in the political process. You've never been involved in politics before. You're too busy. Let me tell you that nothing is more important than preserving this nation. We owe it to our children and to our children's children to pass on to them the heritage of freedom that we inherited ourselves. The socialists are intent upon taking us into a society where there is cradle to the grave control and regulation and regimentation. And I fear that once that is established, it will be a short step to total tyranny. The socialists have gained control of our courts. They've gained control of our educational system. They've gained control of our media. They've gained control of our government in many respects. It's time that the Americans stood up and were counted. It's time for a counter-revolution, a second American revolution. I myself am committed to that. I am an orthopedic surgeon, as you know. I've given up my practice to run for political office. I need your help, and I need it now. You can reach me by calling 408-423-7040. There are a million jobs you can do. You can write to me at 618 Frederick Street, Santa Cruz, California, 95062. We'll provide you with information. We'll provide you with other tapes on other fascinating subjects that will give you insight into the reason for America's retreat from victory, the no-win wars in Korea, the no-win war in Vietnam, and where America is heading. It's time that we started electing to office men who understood two basic principles. First, that this is a religious nation. And secondly, that the power of the central government should be bound down by the chains of the Constitution, that we should have a limited central government, one that can never regiment, regulate, and control us. Join together with me at this time to work to preserve America so that we may pass on to our children and our children's children a nation where men may live in freedom. Thank you. God bless you.